Welcome to the Women at the Top Network author interview series. My name is Regina Barr, and I'm the founder of the Women at the Top Network, and I will be your host today. Women at the Top, for those of you who don't know us, is a community of like-minded women who share the Watt vision and mission. And our goal, simply put, is to empower aspiring women to lead. And we do this by providing information, training, and connections. Joining me today is Nancy Dahl, author of Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention. And before we get started, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Nancy. Nancy's professional career spans five industries with sales ranging from $20 million to $750 million. The largest included 20,000 employees, seven manufacturing plants, over 200 field offices, and in excess of 700 retail operations in North America. In addition, she serves on both corporate and nonprofit boards of directors. Her blog, Lead Your Life at www.nancydahl.com, reaches a global audience dedicated to leading their life with intention. Now her work is dedicated to speaking, writing, and serving as a C-suite board business advisor. She's been recognized as one of 25 women to watch, honored as a distinguished alumni for her career accomplishments, and as a community leader for her dedication to mentoring others. This past January, she was recognized as a woman who leads and was featured on the cover of Minnesota Business Magazine. She earned her undergraduate degree at Gustavus Adolphus College, her MBA graduate degree at University of St. Thomas, and she's a graduate of the University of Minnesota Executive Program. In addition, she has earned numerous professional certifications, including Advanced Board Fellowship Certificate from the National Association of Corporate Directors. She's been married for over 30 years to Brian, and together they enjoy life's adventures with their boys, Eric and Jorgen, both graduates of South Dakota State University. On that note, welcome to our call today, Nancy.
Thank you, Regina. It's good to be here.
I am delighted to have you on our call today, so let's go ahead and get started. The first thing I start with typically is I love to hear the backstory on a book, and particularly your book. You know, our audience may have seen it when they registered, but it literally is an outlet with a plug. So tell us a little bit, why did you write Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention?
You know, I think like a lot of books, it was born out of a passion that the author has. And for me, it was about helping people discover what works for them. You know, when you lead organizations like I've led, often you'll have people that will ask you to be their mentor, and what they really want to grow up and be like you. And you start with, well, I don't know exactly what that means for you. And in the conversation, they want to be a leader. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes I found that they hadn't done their own work about what it meant, for what was important to them. And so the book is a series, grew out of the passion for helping people discover their best so that they could first lead themselves and then lead others. And then it started, you know, with the one-on-ones, with those individual and lots of notes and a folder full of ideas. And the book focus came from a lot of people that said, you've got to write this down. It has mm-hmm. to be done. And I initially resisted it, Regina, because I thought, why does the world need another book on leadership? I think the only thing that's had more written about it is probably the Bible. So I thought, what do I have to say that is unique, right, that would not waste people's time? And for me, it was important to have that personal connection with the reader like I had with the people that I mentored. And so I didn't want to waste people's time. I wanted to make them think, and I wanted to make that personal connection with the reader, even though I wasn't looking at them in the face. So that's the backstory. The cover, you asked about the plug. Mm-hmm. Talks about, and the reason that's there is when you plug in, you go to get energy. And oftentimes you'll find you'll lose energy, you don't feel right, and when you get back to what's important to you, all of a sudden you get charged up. Mm-hmm. You get excited. You want to be able to make it happen. And so the book talks about how to be curious about yourself for life. It's not like taking a test and being done, or going through a course and having it being over. It's about being curious and continually asking questions when you're in your 20s and your 30s and your 40s and your 50s, but always being grounded in the things that matter to you so that as you hit right-hand and left-hand turns and the world spins at a faster rate than you can digest it, you can feel centered and grounded in what's important to you so you can make better decisions. That's the basic premise of the book.
Well, it's very visually catching, and I think, you know, you are spot on when you talk about, you know, this energy, because I think or I like to believe that energy begets energy. So when you are focused on the right thing and you're feeling energized, you get more energy. So that part of what you just said really resonates personally with me, and I suspect it will resonate with a number of our listeners today.
Yeah, it's been fun to get the feedback that says exactly what you just said.
Yeah. So great visual. And, you know, for those of us who are more visual, you know, many times, many ways, so you did convey the message with your visual. Now, your book makes it clear the readers focus should be on understanding what makes them different, not the same. And you indicate that it's this clarity that helps us navigate rough waters and gives us confidence to stay the course. Can you tell me more about that?
Yep, I can. You know, it sounds a little counterintuitive about why would I do that. And I think, you know, if you think about joining an organization or just the pressure of the world in general, you know, people wish to make us the same because it's easier, it's more efficient. You know, I don't have to learn multiple things. I can learn what's different and or learn what's the same instead of what's different. And I think the opposite, frankly, is true. I think we need to learn to use what we have and learn to leverage it and understand it so that we can be our best. You know, we don't come with an operator's manual. And our ability to navigate what we have is based on feedback we get, which is then biased. And the only way to do it is to learn by doing. And I think that's oftentimes what gets missed is people don't try something and then debrief and try something and debrief so that you perfect it over time. Mastery of anything comes through practice and discipline and so on. And so it's really about, you know, having the discipline and the practice to really be in tune with what's important to you for understanding that, not for what organization am I joining and I need to grow up and be just like them. Because you can't be your best when you're trying to be someone else.
Exactly. It's sort of like you're putting a mask on or a uniform that, you know, may not fit as well. And so you started to talk a little bit about debrief, and I wanted to hone in on that. And I want to tell folks that's in chapter 3 of the book because that really resonates with me, and that's something I encourage people to do whether they're working on a project or something for themselves individually. So a lot of people talk about this concept of mindfulness, and you talk about this concept of learning to debrief and the power it has to accelerate your own learning. So tell us a little bit more about your approach to debriefing and why you're so passionate about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the world we live in today is on a one-way ticket to faster. And so things are always moving faster and faster, and it gives you, you're always moving to the next thing. And so it gives you little time to step back and reflect on the experience you had. And unless you do that, you really waste the learning opportunity that you just experienced because you didn't take the time to be thoughtful about it. And so I think that the best feedback comes when we just pause for a moment and reflect back on the experience we had, because life is the ultimate experience model. And in order to really learn what we did, we have to think about it. And so I learned through maybe just tenaciousness of wanting to get feedback. Maybe it was a series of bad bosses that I didn't feel I was getting feedback. I don't know. But really found that there were really four questions that for me helped me gather the feedback I needed to do it repeatedly enough that over time I could build patterns. I could see the feedback I was getting over time. I could see how last time's feedback connected with this time's feedback. And so I've used them both in my own personal life to do my own annual review of myself, but I've also used them with teams. I've used them in leading change. And I have found that the way the question gets asked fundamentally changes the way you think about something and then therefore your forward movement. And so those four questions are: take a pause and ask yourself, for whatever you're looking at, whether it was, you know, the last 6 months or some experience you just had, make a list of everything you're proud of. If it's a group activity, have everybody add something to the list. It's an important thing because even those who didn't like what they were doing have something they're proud of. So it's a activity that gets your brain moving in a forward movement. You're celebrating forward movement, even if things didn't quite go the way you wanted. The second one is, what did you learn? We don't often focus on what we learned because this notion of when we're adults, we know the answers, it's just simply false. And so I think by forcing ourselves to acknowledge our learning helps move us forward and keep us curious about, that's interesting, let me learn more about that. The third question is, what could you have optimized if you were to do it over? Which is fundamentally a different question than what most people want to ask, which is, well, what went wrong? We always want to look at the car wreck and examine all of the things that went wrong. And the question, the way it's phrased, of what could you have optimized, gets you replaying it, but in a forward-looking way to do it better, so that the next time it comes your way, you go, aha, figured this out, versus, oh, crap, here it comes again, I screwed it up last time. And so that question is the one that I find most groups want to change if you use it in a group activity, but it's really insightful about what could I have optimized, what could I have tweaked to get a better outcome. And then the last one is, which is also super critical, is what must you take with you for the next leg of the journey? Because it's, you know, in school, when we go, we get a school supply list and we bring it, put it in our locker, and at the end of the year we take it all up, and then the next year we repeat it. But in life, we don't get a supply list, and we never unpack our locker, and so we just keep lugging all this stuff with us. But if by really stopping and saying, okay, I'm going here and I'm going to do this, what do I need to take with me? It lightens your load, gives you the freedom to only take what you need, and I think really gives you a different perspective when you move forward. So the power of just those four questions, even if it's just a half an hour, then write them down. I actually have mine all in a three-ring binder, and it's amazing to me when you look with all the life experience you have and you pull those out, what kinds of things you see that you keep learning, what kinds of things where you elevated your learning when you start to look at the pattern. So taking the time just to pause for a minute to just record those four learnings is critical.
I think that's great, and I hope that our listeners today will consider, if you didn't capture those four questions, picking up the book and learning more about those. So debrief to be able to really gain that learning for yourself. So this notion of being intentional in your life is a key theme in the book. And yet the world, as you already described, is a busy place and everything is changing all the time and we never really have time to slow down. So how do you keep this notion of intention front and center when we don't really know what could happen? Is this even possible?
Yeah, I think the answer is, I think it is. I obviously believe a lot in intention because a lot of the book talks about that. But I think the intentional part, oftentimes people will say, well, I couldn't be intentional about doing this one specific thing. And I think for me, the notion of being intentional is more directional. Where do I want to go? I want to head north versus I want to go to International Falls. And so it's less about a specific action that you're going to take and more about the end goal, because that gives you the flexibility then to pick a different path to be able to move from this place to that. So, for example, in Minnesota, if you were going to go to International Falls and we're in the Twin Cities, you might go to St. Cloud on the way to Duluth, over to Fargo, and for those that aren't familiar with the state, it looks like a Z. You're kind of zigzagging back and forth, but each step is taking you a step further. And so intentionality is having enough of a look ahead about where you're going in your life so that you can maneuver it much like you would in road construction.
Mm-hmm.
You know you want to go to a city. The road you wanted to take is under construction. You can't necessarily go that way, and so you pick a different way. And so you're still being intentional about your destination, but you can't always prescribe the individual action. So for that reason, I think it is very possible to be intentional, but only if you put forward the effort of saying, where is it I want to go, which is frankly what a lot of people don't do. And so they take life as it comes their way, and that, I think, shortchanges the opportunity that you could have if you were more thoughtful about where you were going.
And I wholeheartedly agree, and I think that is why so many people were probably saying, you know, you got to write this down, because I do think most people take life as it comes to them, as opposed to creating their own, you know, GPS route, if you will, to get them where they want to go, including roadblocks and construction and weather conditions, et cetera, right? Because that is part of the world that we live in, that, you know, things aren't a straight path. There's a visual of success, right? Most people think it looks like a straight line from point A to B, but if you actually start to talk to most people like yourself, it's a Z or like a squiggly, crazy line that gets them from point A to point B. So I think for our listeners today, it's, you know, the more intentional you can be, and to your point, having a focus on where you want to go, in some regards, it will be easier to get there just having that intent, no matter what life throws you. So, which leads us to our next point. Yeah.
Yep. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it leads us to my next point is, which I love, is that you dismiss this idea of living a balanced life and instead focus on an integrated life. I often tell people it's not about life balance, it's about life choices, and that, you know, we have spikes, you know, here and there, and it gets back to that concept of what you were talking about, energy, if you're focused on things you have passion and energy for. So I love that you make that distinction, and I want to hear from you, why is that distinction important, not only to you, but to the listeners and the readers of your book?
Yeah, I think the whole notion of balance suggests that things are equal, and I don't think that's the main point in life. I think instead it's first to acknowledge that life is a multidimensional experience that changes over time. And so when we're young, there's certain things that are important to us that are maybe to a lesser degree or greater degree as we get older. And so our goal should really be to live life understanding what's important and having be able to live it in a way that allows us to integrate those things that are important, which some days might mean I'm all in work. And the next night might mean I'm all in family. But when you step back and look at it over time, you say, I was able to include my time at the cabin with a very busy work life, with time for my kids, with time for my photography, or whatever your hobbies are, and you did it over a period of time. I think the notion of balance says they're equal, and I don't think that's a notion that's worth chasing. I think it's fiction. And that's why I think the choice of word in this particular case is important.
Well, and I do like that word integrated, and I like where you went with that. Now, you dedicated a chapter to leading innovation and change, which is timely given what's going on in the world currently, and you talk about three key concepts. Can you describe those key concepts for us?
I can. This notion of innovation and change is, as you said, change is going to come and go. Well, I think it's a constant state of change, and so how do we build resilience to be able to make it happen? And so I think the first concept is that innovation is a personal issue first. I think you have to be a learner for life. You have to, which means you learn out loud. I try things on with my teams at the same rate I'm learning, they're learning. And that learning together builds momentum, because this notion that we're going to grow up and be the teacher and have the answer book, I think is those times have passed us. And I think things are better when we can compare notes. And so, you know, if you're not going to be innovating in your life, it's going to be difficult for you to be a leader that leads innovation, because you've forgotten how to learn. You only know how to tell the answer. And so I think that's one that a lot of people miss. They think if I'm a leader and I'm a leader in innovation, you know, it's great until it shows up on the CEO's desk and it changes how they do their behavior. I've said with organizations in particular that they only go as far as the leader's shadow. So if a leader's not an innovator, the bottom of the organization can innovate, but it's never going to rise to the top if the top leader isn't a learner. So that's the first one, if it's personal.
Okay.
And I can often tell if an organization is going to move forward just by asking the simple question of the leader, tell me something you're innovating in their life. And if they can't give it to me, I can kind of tell you what's going to happen with, you know, some of the things happening inside the organization. I think the second one, and we don't think about this, but I think the skills about leading innovation have to be learned. They're not in our natural human tendency. And so you have to be very intentional about that. So, for example, you know, I've already talked about one, that it's a learning process. I think the spirit of change and innovation, to your earlier point, is not a straight line. It can be squiggly and meandering, and that is actually where the power of innovation happens. But you have to be patient with it. And so as a leader, you need to learn to be patient. You know, you want to get to the answer. You want to move things quickly because of the pressures to perform, both for yourself and the organization, but you've got to be patient. The second one is, I think, our human nature is that we don't want to change. We would prefer the comfort of the things that we know because they feel the same, and that we don't worry about them. We don't get fearful of them. And so you need to learn to push yourself to learn new things even though when they're not comfortable. And I think the last one that often will get missed is we're really feeling animals that think. So a leader and ourselves have to ignite our passion around a subject. We have to understand why a change is necessary so we can be grounded to be empathetic to others, but we also then can pour our passion and our whole self into the mix. And so I think those three skills need to be top of mind when you get in this space of change innovation. And I think lastly, the steps of innovation often aren't, sort of this go big, go home concept.
Mm-hmm.
And the faster you get there, the better you are. And I think it's different than that. I think it is about dreaming big, certainly. What is it I envision in my life or for the organization? But then it's about having the patience and discipline to start tiny and then scale with intention. I think it's those three steps. And oftentimes, you know, you'll think big and then you'll start tiny. You get one little win and then all of a sudden you want to go across the board when you haven't really vetted out, you know, the other things that need to be thought through. And because innovation is about doing, it is also then about learning. And so when you need to find out that things don't work, you need to apply the learning to the next step. And oftentimes an innovation won't happen, not because it was a great idea, not because the big idea didn't fit, but because the learning that happened along the way didn't get applied to the future outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And so you missed a step. And I think by slowing it down, it also tells your team that learning's safe. So therefore, they get much more engaged. They learn right along. It removes the risk. And that ultimately builds momentum for an organization to move forward.
Yeah, and we need more people and more companies to be innovative. So I think those three key concepts are critical, and I appreciate you sharing them with our listeners today. Now, in your book, it's clear that relationships matter to you. You dedicated a chapter to it in your life lessons, and you make it clear. So the reader needs to find time to build and nurture connections. Do you think this is a dying art form, and particularly for women who are on our call today, you know, listening in? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think a yes and no answer. I think the connection part today is easy, right? LinkedIn, just hit connect, or Facebook, gather a like. I think that part of it is gaining momentum, where in the old days you had to collect business cards. Well, then I had to make a personal connection, or I had to pick them up on a table or something. It was slower. So that part is going faster. I think what matters, though, isn't the length of the list. It's rather the quality of the connection.
Mm-hmm.
So I call it the authentic connection. And that takes dedicated time. It takes effort to communicate in an authentic way that I know who you are, Regina. I know a little bit about your life. I feel like we can connect beyond, oh, yeah, we attended this conference together. That part, I think, is a dying art.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a misnomer that, well, I have you on my list, and I can, just because you're a friend with me on LinkedIn and we're connected, I can come at you with some requests and asks and so on. And those kinds of things happen when you have a relationship that someone trusts you and they're willing to help. And that's where I think people need to spend more time. And that part of it, I think, is a dying art, because it's too easy to communicate or say you're communicating, but you're really not. You're passing a text, you're hitting a like, you're connecting on LinkedIn, you're doing some of those things next to you next to a conference. But to truly dedicate time to do breakfast, lunch, dinner, or have a cup of coffee with someone, I don't think a lot of people are doing that disciplined enough to build that authentic big network that, you know, will pay dividends into the future.
Agree. It's really about quality, not quantity. You know, it's not he who has the most connections on LinkedIn or Facebook, you know, at the end of the day wins. It's really who's got those quality connections. So I think you're raising a very good and valid point, and I think that women in particular need to be mindful, because they are so busy, to make sure that they are taking time to invest in nurturing and developing some of those critical relationships. So I appreciate you bringing that up today.
I think just as a follow-on,
just a follow-on on that,
I think one of the things, to your point of women being busy, is put it on your to-do list. Who am I meeting with this month that I want to stay in contact with? I have that list, and if I wasn't doing it, I won't say it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen as frequently. So take responsibility for making the connection and then sowing the seeds of that connection authentically going into the future. So what women do well is make a list of things they need to do. They just need to make sure that on that list are things for them, as it relates to their network, and I think it's easier to do than it sounds.
I completely agree. It is easier to do than it sounds, and I think that half the battle is what you said, is to calendar it, put it on your to-do list, and then it's amazing because we women make a lot of stuff happen that way. But if it doesn't get on the list, you know, we have zero chance of making it happen. If it gets on the list, I always tell people it's 50-50, right? You got a better shot at getting it done. Probably better than 50-50, but that's just a good starting point. So now you talk about your book leading to powerful conversations with your readers. What have been some of the most interesting feedback you have received from readers, or at least one piece of feedback that you've gotten about the book and the impact it's had on their lives that you could share with us?
Yeah, I think, you know, the feedback is that to me is tells me the book was worth writing when readers take time to come back to you and say, here's what happened as a result of reading your book. I think the common theme, you know, I have your book and I was going to read it and thought I would just breeze through it because I've read a lot of leadership books, or this is a space I feel like I know well. And they'll inevitably come back and say, not so fast. Because it's a fairly easy book to read, the questions that are raised there cause people to pause. And so they've done one of two things. They've either read all the way through the book and earmarked the pages, which is always when I meet with a reader, there's inevitably pages that are earmarked. Or they've written notes in the margin and use it as a discussion group to come back to people, either their spouse or some of the other things, to really play back how they're thinking about the book. That has been really fun because they tell you what happened. I had one woman call me and she said, I've got all these pages of notes. And she said, my husband can't wait to meet you. And I said, well, why? And she said, because he wants to tell you that he got his wife back.
Wow.
And I said, well, what does that exactly mean? And he said, well, he said, because of the way you asked the questions in the book and because I talked to him about my notes, he was able to call a spade, and we had a different conversation than we'd had before, much more authentic. It grounded them in a new reality. So together they were able to move as a couple. You know, so anything from that to a brand new perspective, gosh, I was stuck in my own thinking. I didn't realize I needed to do it this way. Or this process was so ominous, but after reading your book, I feel empowered. I know where to start. Or I've used it with my team, and it's created a language that improved my ability to work together. So it's had some really profound breakthroughs with people that have read the book and, you know, been curious. The book is for the curious that really want to, you know, discover that next thing or ask themselves the tough questions and be willing to do the work. And so it's really been fun. And, you know, it's affected both male and female. I've had it in education industry, you know, regular industry, leadership. You know, it's kind of touched all those places. And so it's really been super fun. I think the cutest text message I got was from a friend who had bought the book and it was sitting around the Christmas tree, and her 9-year-old nephew picked it up and read it cover to cover.
Oh,
and
my. Wow.
Said, I think I'm her son from another mother, and I want to open a business.
Wow.
And so, you know, so I've had everything from 74-year-olds to, in this case, a 9-year-old. I had one gentleman send me a text, and he said, a picture of page 105, and he said, I don't really like to read. I don't read very many books, and I couldn't put your books on until I finally had to, and it was page 105.
Wow.
So that's been really fun.
Very fun. It sounds like it's been very rewarding for you, Nancy. With that, we are actually out of time. So I would say, folks, for those of you on the phone, be curious. And I hope that our conversation today with Nancy has caused you to be curious about her book, Grounded, Leading Your Life with Intention. And just a reminder, you can learn more about Nancy, her book, and programs at nancymdahl.com. And Dahl is spelled D-A-H-L. So thank you for being here today, Nancy. And for those of you who are still on the line, be sure to join us next month as we talk with Danita Bai, author of Millennials Matter. On that note, thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great day.